Welcome to A Waldorf Journey, a podcast for teachers, parents, students, and people who are passionate about Waldorf education. I'm Meredith, and I'm glad you're here. I've been teaching in the Waldorf Grades classroom for years, and I'm currently teaching my fourth class of Waldorf students. I've learned a thing or two about Waldorf education over the years, and some of those lessons were not easy. Through it all, though, I've come to the conclusion that there's nothing better than Waldorf for nurturing, thoughtful human beings who love to learn. In this podcast, I'll share little details and big picture ideas that make me love Waldorf. Whether you're just beginning your Waldorf journey or you've been working with the Waldorf approach for years, as a teacher or a parent, you're bound to get some real-life practical advice. You can find show notes for this episode, along with a lot more useful content, on my website, awaldorfjourney.com. While you're there, sign up for the newsletter to receive updates about new content on the blog and the podcast. You can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as A Waldorf Journey. This episode is being brought to you by my summer productivity course. I have been running these seasonal productivity courses for over the past year, and this is actually the fourth year that I'm running this summer productivity course. The response to these courses has been just fantastic, and if you are listening to this episode when it goes live, then signups are still open for my summer productivity course, but only for a few more days. We start just coming up in the next few days. So the course runs for 6 weeks, and the idea is that at the end, you will have finished all of your summer prep and you'll be ready for the year to start. When you sign up, you will get weekly goals that are sent to you via email, so that when you follow those goals, you will be on target to end your summer planning and start the school year ready to go. You'll get PDF downloads that support your work. I have all kinds of templates that will help you just make the documents that you'll need to support your year, and lots of other just PDFs that give you ideas for things to support your work throughout the year. You'll get membership in a private Facebook group. You'll get live conference calls and individualized email support. We are going to talk about the big picture plan for the year, how you're going to look at the year as a whole. We'll talk about planning your academic goals, so having a real roadmap for yourself so you know what your students are going to need to learn over the course of the year. We'll talk about creating a feedback and evaluation plan. We'll talk about a student observation rhythm, so you know when you are going to observe your students so that you can get a good idea about what they're going to need to support their development next. We'll talk about block prep, just how you get all that content ready for the year. And we'll talk about classroom organization. So all of this material will come to you in the form of weekly emails, and also always on the website for you to access. So I have been doing all of this stuff every summer for the past 15 years. And so I've got lots of tips and suggestions for making this work more enjoyable and manageable so that you feel good and rested at the end of your summer. So if you want more information about this, you can get more info at awaldorfjourney.com/summer course. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention, I don't talk about it very often on here, but I have a whole collection of curriculum resources available on my blog. So whether you're looking to teach form drawing in first grade or physics in eighth grade, I probably have a guide that will help you get through it. So you can check out those resources by going to awaldorfjourney.com/shop. And know that those guides not only help you with your teaching, but your purchase also helps to support the podcast. So I've got some exciting content in the works over the next few months, and I really appreciate the support. Okay, so let's dive in here. You know, after being away from podcasting for so long, I just thought it might be a good idea just to come back with just a little bit of an update, just kind of share a little bit about what's on my mind right now as we are sort of in the middle of the summer. And just things I'm thinking about with my class and with my students, and see if you might be thinking some of those same things. So it's been a while since I recorded, and I don't know, I always say that I am feeling inspired and that I want to get back to recording. So I do feel that way. So, but I've been hearing from plenty of you telling me that you miss the podcast and that you really enjoy it. So I'm going to do my best and try to record a little bit more. So, so let's just kind of dive in. The thing that is really on my mind the most right now in terms of my work with my students is that they are heading into fifth grade, which in a certain way, like fifth grade is not one of those developmental milestone years necessarily. You know, it's not like there's the 9-year change that happens in third grade and then the 12-year change that happens in sixth grade. It's not one of those. So in some ways, it, you know, it maybe is a little anticlimactic, but it is definitely a year, like it has me thinking about how my work with my students is going to change over the course of the next few years. And a big part of the reason why this is on my mind so much right now is that this summer, I did some work at a summer intensive training, and I worked with some middle school teachers. And one, it was like, I guess I've been thinking lately about when I think about middle school and think about, you know, these students that I've been teaching since first grade, now, you know, being so much older and heading into that phase of their development, I've really had this like, oh gosh, here we go. Just, you know, really, it is just so much different. And that working with those teachers in this summer program that where I taught this just a few weeks ago, I really remembered how much I love middle school. And so it was really nice. It was nice to have that experience and to just, you know, touch in about middle school before my students are there themselves. And so I'm still having, you know, it allowed me to cultivate some good feelings about them heading in that direction. But I also was just thinking about the work that we've done over the past few years and how that work is serving us and supporting us as we're moving into middle school. And so that is really what I wanted to talk a bit about in this episode. And so, like, if you are a lower grades teacher or parent or homeschool parent or parent in general, then you can think about this. You can think about this as like things that you should do with your younger children to support them when they are in middle school. Because there are certain things that there are things that are more difficult to work on when they're in middle school. And there are things that like routines and habits and things that will really serve them to have in place before they get to middle school, because it is hard to work on that. I would say habit development is really, it's a hard thing to work on in middle school. So using your time in the lower grades to work on that is really important. So anyway, I'm going to go into that in a minute. But so the other thing, you know, was that I was thinking about with all of this is that I don't know if you know my story as a teacher, but I started teaching in middle school. And in fact, I taught 3 classes in the middle school. I took a class 5th through 8th grade, and then another class 5-6, and then another class 4th through 8th grade. And it wasn't until this current group that is now going into 5th grade that I started in 1st grade. And when I started with this group in 1st grade, I really started with them as a middle school teacher. So I definitely had that vision. I knew what middle school looks like and feels like. I knew what some of the challenges were that they would be facing. And I knew some of the habits and the things that we would need to learn that would support us and that would help them to be successful. So it's interesting. Like, I'm coming to understand myself as a teacher so much more as, you know, not a lower grades teacher. And, you know, in some ways I am a lower grades teacher. I have been a lower grades teacher and I can do that fairly well. But middle school is really where, I don't know, I feel drawn to the middle school. Now, I will say, too, that I actually think of myself mostly as a middle grades teacher. Like, I just love those grades, like fourth through sixth, I think, are my primo years. I just really love those years. And that is because habit forming is such a big part of those years. Like, it is so important to work on habits and use rhythm in those years. And that is just a strength of mine as a teacher, is just rhythm and consistency. So anyway, with all that said, I thought it would be really good for us to talk about, like, how our work is, how things change when you go from lower grades to middle school, and what are the things that you learn in lower grades that you've hopefully done, or if you're still in lower grades, that you can work on that will really support your students when they become middle schoolers. So, and what it really all comes down to is that we are setting a solid framework for them. And the idea is that you can think about it as, like, when they get to middle school, they are on just a roller coaster of emotions and social drama and just their own interests, right? They just have such a wide range, they're hot and cold and all over the place. They're just very, what can I say? It's a roller coaster ride, right? Like, they in a most wonderful, beautiful way, because they love things and they hate things and they get intensely involved in whatever it is that they're doing, which that is just beautiful, right? I mean, the fact that they have that passion at that age is just a really wonderful thing. The thing that is difficult about having that passion at that age is that it can be very unsettling for them, right? So what we're trying to do, what we want to do in the lower grades or in the years leading up to middle school, is to give them a really solid ground under their feet so that they just have a framework that supports them as they're on the roller coaster ride. So we're like laying the track, I guess you could think of, so that when they come off of those highs and lows, they still have like a baseline, something that is going to keep them going and keep them supported through their work. So good habits, structure, routines, all of those kinds of things. We want to build the capacity for holding those routines and structures over these years leading up to middle school, so that they'll still be there when they jump on the roller coaster ride or when they jump off the roller coaster ride, so that it's so they have a solid ground under their feet. And you can really see this so strongly in the sixth grade curriculum. The sixth grade curriculum is, like, I think of it as the infrastructure year. So, you know, you're studying Rome, where they built, you know, roads and aqueducts and, you know, it was all about just building that infrastructure. In sixth grade, we are showing them, like, the physical, in geography, we talk about the, like, the physical structures of the earth. Like, what are the things that, you know, that are holding you? We talk about latitude and longitude. We're just, like, giving them organizational tools for understanding the earth in that geography block. What's another example? Oh, we teach them, usually we teach them how to, you know, keep a calendar, right? How to track their assignments. So in sixth grade, instead of me keeping a list of the main lesson pages on the chalkboard, each student had a form that I, you know, I gave them the form. So I'm giving them the structure, but then they are filling it in themselves and, you know, checking off the pages as they complete them. And so that sixth grade year is so much about giving, building up that infrastructure. And the years leading up to that, certainly it's true for that, for those years as well. So, but I really do think about fourth and fifth grade as being so much about habit building. And really all of the lower grades are that way. I mean, I can't think of a year that we did not focus on building strong habits. So what are some of those habits that you really want to take a look at? So the first one that comes to mind for me is homework. Now, you know, what you decide to, everybody has strong opinions about homework, and, you know, that, whatever your opinion about homework is, you need to approach it with intention and recognize that whatever attitudes or structures or thoughts, habits about homework that you want your students to have, you need to consciously work towards building those in the lower grades, especially fourth and fifth and sixth to some degree as well. So really thinking with intention, like, how do I set up a homework routine, you know, so that my student will really have a good feeling about doing their homework, will have structures about, you know, when they do their homework. So you really want to support them in that, and then do that again and again and again. Whatever the routine is that you are trying to develop in them, whatever, you know, attitude or feeling you want for them to have about, and, you know, I'm talking about homework now, but this really applies to any topic or any habit that you want to build in your child. So you set it up with a lot of consciousness and a lot of intention and let them practice it and just live into that again and again and again. And through rhythm, help them develop that solid, consistent, consciously cultivated attitude about homework. So when I think about homework, and I, you know, it's interesting, I usually start homework in fourth grade. It happened that our fourth grade year, because of COVID, was, you know, everything was homework, basically. But I'll be really looking in fifth grade at, you know, how do I cultivate a good attitude or the right attitude or what I want my students to feel about homework. And, you know, I always ask myself, well, what is the point? What is the purpose behind what I'm doing? And so, I mean, this is kind of turning into a little bit of a thing about homework, but I think it's important because I think about homework, like, why would I give a student homework? And so that's also how I try to, like, sift through, you know, these varying opinions that are out there and strong feelings about homework. What I ask myself is, okay, what is the purpose? What purpose does homework serve? Is it that I want my students to get more practice at a particular skill? Well, I don't know, not really, because I wouldn't give homework for that, just because I don't know that they're doing it. It could be that they're getting, you know, on FaceTime with their friends and doing the homework together. So who knows how much of it is their work. So I'm not, you know, like, I could not feel reassured that they have gotten more practice or learned a concept because they completed homework about it. So it's not about that. It's really, for me, it's about establishing a connection between home and school. And it's helping students to kind of remember they go home, but school still exists. And when they're at school, home still exists. And so it's about really just building that bridge and helping them learn how to take things back and forth, to get home and remember that you have something to do for this other part of your life, right? So that's really that would be my intention around homework, and just to build up that habit around it so that they, you know, have a good attitude and they feel good about doing schoolwork at home. So with that in mind, I would then structure whatever my homework was accordingly. So I might, I would have consistent due dates and assignment dates, right? I would maybe have students, give them assignments that are kind of fun and something that they would want to do and that they feel kind of so that they end up having this good feeling about homework, that they like to do their homework. I would not use homework as like a chance to finish things up, because it's just a little, often the students who need more time to finish things up, they might have a harder time remembering that they have something to do when they get home. So, and it's also those assignments are a little bit too inconsistent, you know. So you work on a main lesson page, let's say on Tuesday, and, you know, they don't finish it. So you say, oh, finish it up as homework. Well, you know, this Tuesday I have a homework assignment, but maybe next Tuesday I'm not going to have a homework assignment. It just doesn't help support, you know, having an inconsistent rhythm like that just doesn't help support that habit building aspect of homework. Okay, so homework is just like one of the habits that I think is a really good thing to work on and cultivate in these years leading up to middle school. Other things, I would say finishing their work, right? So knowing that, you know, just having a sense of completion about whatever task that they take on. So whether it's, you know, in person, main lesson pages that we're doing, or if it's homework, whatever it might be, that they value completing and finishing their work is a good habit to work on building in these years. You want to build habits around engaging with the lessons so that you cultivate an expectation that students will do their best to be interested and to engage with the lessons. And, you know, if you hold a standard for engagement, you know, and you're doing your work also to make the lessons engaging, then their natural interest in what you are doing and working on together will just take over. I've worked with students where they had already decided before class began that it just was not going to be something that they were interested in. And sure enough, it wasn't, right? And so I knew that if they have to kind of ride on the tails of discipline and a habit of being attentive and engaging with the lessons, that they have to start with that. And then the natural interest and enthusiasm for the lesson will take over, but they can't, that's not going to kick in right away. And so they have to, they have to have that discipline at least to begin. And, this was one of those lessons that was really challenging for me to learn, because I learned in my teacher training that if I had students that were not attending, or that were, you know, getting distracted in class, or that were just not engaging with the lessons, then that was because I had not made the lessons engaging enough, and that I needed to try to make them just more, you know, newer, more interesting, or have some, you know, a greater spark of some sort. And, you know, it really took me a while to figure out that, yes, I do my work of making my lessons engaging and interesting and fun, but they have to start with a natural, like, or it may not be natural. They have to begin with an expectation of engaging with the lessons. And then, you know, often it's just a few minutes and then they're with you, right? And they get with you. But if you don't have that at least groundwork of the expectation is that we engage with our work together, then you're almost, you know, done before you start. So yeah, and that I do think there's value in getting to that through discipline and rhythm and routine and expectation. And then the other piece of this is just about general classroom behavior. So building a strong habit around how things are done in the classroom. And that can be from the finest, tiniest little detail to, you know, like you, I wish I could. There are so many examples, I guess, that come to mind that, you know, you don't keep any loose papers in your desk, or your weekly math assignment always goes in the yellow folder on the left hand side, you know, like little, you know, minute details like that, which like, OK, how important is that? Right. It's who really cares if they put their weekly math assignment on the left hand side of the yellow folder, right? It doesn't really matter, except that it's habit forming and it shows that you are attentive to the details and that you're teaching them that the details matter and that they can follow through on those details. And somebody told me one time it's the NYPD approach, the New York Police Department, that their approach is that if you focus on the small stuff, the big stuff never really happens. And, you know, and I've certainly seen that in my classes, you know, so I ask students to like just straighten the curtain or, you know, just the tiniest little detail that I just say, oh, that needs to be done. Can somebody take care of that? And it just builds one, it builds authority for the teacher. But then it also just builds this expectation of paying attention to the small details. So, and yeah, and then of course the bigger things too. You know, what are our habits about sharing in class, raising your hand? When is it okay to not raise your hand? When is it okay to chat with your neighbor? Like those little things, you know, are habits. And that you need to actively cultivate in your class, right? And to just make sure that your students are, that you're working together in a way. And really that is what this is all about. And that it kind of leads into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, that these grades leading up to middle school, 4, 5, 6, are just such a prime time for cultivating a culture of caring in your group. And part of that caring is that your students care, they care about themselves, right? They care about their own work. They have, you know, integrity when it comes to doing their work and engaging with the lessons that you present. But they care about you also, and they care about what the class as a whole is creating together. And, you know, like when they're younger, this is a very subconscious feeling. You know, they feel like they are a part of this group. My colleague talks about it. They're swimming in the fishbowl, right? And so they just are all together swimming around. It's not that they have any awareness of themselves as individuals. But as they get older, that individuality, they become more aware of themselves as individuals. But it takes a little bit more consciousness to keep an eye on that holding a vision for how we're working together as a group. If I don't know if I'm articulating myself very well, but they do recognize, like, okay, I'm a part of this class and this is what this class is doing and I'm a part of that. And how am I contributing to that? And that these years are just so great for building up that awareness and helping them to recognize that they are an important part of what is being created in the culture of your class. So, and in my notes, I just put the term, I put the phrase, we're good people and we're working together. And that you want them to just have that attitude about the work that's happening in the class, that they, it's like we are, I sometimes talk about Team Floyd Preston. So that's, my students call me Miss Floyd Preston. And so I say, you know, when we're like working together, it's, or when they're doing something to support my work, it's like, oh, Team Floyd Preston, you are on it. You are really, and, you know, I don't know if I say it so much to them. I would probably more say, like, you know, team grade five or something. But it's, you know, because it's not about me, but it's really about the culture that we're building together and what the class together is, what the individuality of the class is, if that makes sense. So we want to really build that up in them. And so what are the things that we do? How do we do that? So we, you know, talk about how we're really, you know, on the same team, that we are helping to create something here. It's, I talk to them about this in a conscious way. So I refer to the class as a whole and what the gifts and strengths of the class as a whole are. And, you know, I refer to what the challenges are too. I, you know, probably only do that in, as it pertains to, you know, how they can so easily accomplish and conquer those challenges. But really talking about them as a group and how, what the group is like. So I wrote a post about this recently on my Substack account, which I will link to that in the show notes. But Substack is really great. You should go over. I think if you just go to awaldorfjourney.substack.com, you can join my Substack newsletter. And I post stuff there that I do not post other places. And so you can, and what's great about Substack is that it comes right to your email, so you don't have to, like, happen to be lucky enough to come upon this blog post that was really interesting. So it just will come into your email inbox. And it's, what I post in that Substack is, like, not spammy stuff, I promise. So it's, you know, it's, I really want it to be just a valuable resource for people. So yeah, I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's awaldorfjourney.substack.com. So you can go to that. And so I wrote a post about this. And in that post, I kind of included some language that I use, like when I'm talking to the group, that helps to build them up and help them envision and see who they are as individuals within a group, and also what the individuality of the class is like as well. And so it's like little things. So if I'm building up an image of each, you know, individual child, for example, you know, I might say, you know, something like, you know, oh, it's so much easier if I think about individual children in my class, though I know some of my class parents listen, so you might wonder if it's yours. But, you know, I think about, you know, a student who just always volunteers whenever a chore needs to be done or whenever a specific chore needs to be done. And, you know, and even if they don't always volunteer or, you know, or if they sometimes volunteer, you know, I might say something like, you know, I can always count on you. When something needs to be done in this room, you are always right there to get it done. You know, so like little things like that, it is a little bit like kind of categorizing kids or labeling them in a sense. But I think it's in such a positive way, and I'm doing it with intention that I think it's okay. I think the end justifies the means in this case. So, and then, you know, and I might do the same thing for the class as a whole, right? So I'm trying to think about what an example of something that I've observed about, you know, oh, like something like if they, there was a big like cleanup chore time that we did in class and, you know, everybody was working and everybody was bustling around. You know, at the end of it, when we all gathered together, I might just say something like, you know, wow, you guys are the hardest working bunch of 10-year-olds I've ever met. And, you know, so little things like that where you're just kind of building them up and you're, you know, you're complimenting and you're praising, which, of course, we have to be careful about, you know, getting them to just kind of thrive on that praise. But the way I think about it more is that I'm helping them to build up their identity, both as a group and as an individual, you know, and like helping them to sort of build a reputation for themselves to live up to. So I remember once working with a student who was really struggling socially, and every student in the class cared about this student. And I remember using an opportunity when the child wasn't at school one day just to bring attention to that and just to share with the class about the, you know, the reputation that I had envisioned for this child. So, you know, that this kid is just a friend. Like, you can always turn to that person when you need someone. So, and just sharing those little snippets of, you know, my observations or just my thoughts about the individuality of the child or of the group as a whole can really help them to form their conception and their vision of who they are and how they fit into this group. And, yeah. And I just think it's a super healthy thing to do, especially as you're moving into middle school. I think it helps them to be seen and it helps them to just build up their own idea of themselves as caring, thoughtful individuals, which they are. And or they all have the capacity to be at various times, for sure. And then, you know, it's a lot harder when they get into middle school. So that's why, that's the point of all of this, is that taking the time to build them up now in all of those different ways, right? Before they're getting into middle school, where, you know, the words that you say as a teacher just don't quite carry as much weight. I hate to break it to you, but that it's always kind of a bitter pill for us to swallow that, you know, when our students get into, seventh grade, I think is just the prime time for this. Their friends are so important to them. And those relationships and that social connection that they have is so important. I remember in seventh grade, just feeling like, I was like a fly on the wall. Like, I mean, they had good habits and they would listen to me when I was presenting and when I was teaching. But those were just like the momentary interludes between what they really came to school for, which was all of the social connection and everything that they got out of that, which definitely nourished and helped them and was like exactly what they needed to do at that time. But anyway, I just remember it being, you know, my position as the teacher and my authority as the teacher is just shifted in a completely different way. And it was only because I felt like it was only because we had good habits and routines and structures. And yeah, just a habit of respect in the classroom. And that's what supported us through that time when, you know, that seventh grade social thing is just so important. So yeah, there's just far less focus on me as the teacher, which is a blessing and a curse, right? We just have to recognize it, I guess. The other thing in middle school, it's much more about the content, right, that you're exploring. And so it's and that your attitude about exploring the content is different. Whereas, you know, in the lower grades, you stand in front of your students and you speak to them and you say, I am your teacher. Listen to me. Right. And that like all content is kind of delivered from the teacher to the students in that way through the teacher's authority. Whereas as you're moving into middle school, and I think this is definitely much more of a high school impulse, but the middle schoolers are moving in that direction. And so you have to very much kind of shift your attitude. So it's not that you're standing before your students, teaching to them or sharing whatever the content is straight from you to them. You're more standing side by side with them and you're looking at the content together. You're exploring it together. And so, and yes, you're, coaching, you're a little bit more, you do step in front a little bit and say, oh, let's go this way now. And then you step back, standing side by side with them. And so it's kind of a dance in that way that you have to have that intuition about what role you're taking when, but it definitely shifts. It will not work, to stand before them and present in the same way that you have in the lower grades. And I was thinking that, and in this post on Substack, you can read about this, that the morning verse is really, the two morning verses, the lower grades and the upper grades, are really, they really summarize, you can hear the difference in it, in the two of them. And I thought I would just share, and Waldorf grade students typically speak the lower grades morning verse in grades 1 through 4, and then the upper grades morning verse begins in fifth grade, so they speak that 5th through 8th. And so that, I guess that's another reason why, as we're heading into fifth grade, I'm thinking so much about the heading into middle school. So although it's also my prep this summer, so much different than what it's been in the past. So, but that's another episode. But looking at those morning verses, let's just sort of take a look at those. So if we look at the lower grades morning verse, I'm just thinking that we'll just look at the first line in each. So the first line in the lower grades morning verse is, the sun with loving light makes bright for me each day. So in that verse, you can hear the sun with loving light makes bright for me each day, right? So the sun is just, out there casting its light onto the child, and the child is passively receiving the light of the sun, right? So it's just like, I just envision this child with their head tipped up to the sun and just sort of, soaking it all in, right? But it's a passive attitude, I would say, in that. Whereas the upper grades morning verse, the first line is, I look into the world wherein there shines the sun. And so it's a very different attitude. One, this is it, I guess, that the the child or the young adult is active in this verse. I look into the world. And you know, it's not that the sun is just like gazing down on them. They are looking out into the world. And out there, the sun is shining. And I'm going to go, I am seeing it. And I'm looking at it. So it really just paints a picture of how the attitude shifts so much moving from lower grades into upper grades. So anyway, that is what I wanted to share with you today. So thank you so much for being with me. A few resources I wanted to share about, they're super on my mind. Well, one is that Substack newsletter. So if you go to waldorfjourney.substack.com, then you can sign up to get my newsletter. It's different than what I share other places. I think you'll really, and you can, if you sign up for it, then you get access to everything that I've posted in that newsletter, but you'll also get everything new into your inbox, which I think is a good thing. And then the other thing I wanted to share, like all of this discussion about, developing a classroom culture of respect and care and all of those things. My favorite resource for all of that, I've talked a lot in the past about responsive classroom. And so that is definitely one of them. I think it is responsiveclassroom.org. The organization that runs it is called the Center for Responsive Schools, I think it is. But my favorite book is called Teaching Children to Care. And I'll link to it in the show notes. And all of the links that I share in the show notes are Amazon affiliate links. So that just gives me it just helps support the podcast a little bit. It doesn't cost you anything, but it's super helpful to me if you use those links. And hey, if you're going to do your school supply shopping, hit one of my Amazon links before you do it. That would super help. I just get a little kickback for anything you buy after you click one of my links. You can also go to the Facebook group. It's called A Waldorf Journey Resource Room. That is linked in the show notes. And if you wanted to support the podcast, you can also go to awaldorfjourney.com/coffee and make a little contribution. And the next time I am sipping on my latte while recording a podcast, I will think of you. As always, if you have any questions or thoughts or ideas about future episodes or just questions. I mean, I do want to say I get emails from people all the time where they apologize for emailing me and they say, I know you're super busy, but I'm just wondering, like, what's a good reader for sixth grade or whatever it might be. Please email me and don't apologize because I love this stuff. That's why I do this. So I love hearing from you. So feel free to email me. You can do that at meredith@awaldorfjourney.com. So thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you again soon, hopefully sooner rather than later. All right, bye for now.